I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next 90 minutes, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 13th episode of Hyper Hooligan, lucky number 13. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. My guest today is one of my dearest friends. She has been the owner of Fiesta Yarns for over 12 years now and is the driving force behind the amazing colors that our company produces. If you've ever picked up a skein of La Boheme, you'll know what I mean. She is one of the most savvy marketing minds that I know and one of the best people I've ever met. I'm speaking of Jeannie Randolph, who joins us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Jeannie, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin, and good morning, Cyber Hooligans.
So it's great to finally have you on the show. You know, you have been around the show for a long time. You were kind of there early on when I started going, should I do this or not? And as most of my listeners know, you were the person that my guest co-hooligans had to interview in order to get the job. But this is the first time that you're going out live to the whole world for the Fiber Hooligans, not just a private show. Nervous?
Not at all. Are you?
No, not at all. I am nervous every single time the show starts. I hear that intro music and I go, but then it all kinds comes together. So, is it beautiful there in Albuquerque?
Well, I have to say it's always beautiful in Albuquerque. You know, we get about 340 days of sunshine here. We're up in the mountains at 5,000 feet, and it really, you know, it's really just pretty awesome here all the time.
That's great. It's actually a beautiful day here today. So I got to ask, how are the dogs?
Oh, the girls are great. Sadie and Shelby are sitting here in the kitchen with me, laying on their little sleeping pad, and hopefully they will continue to sleep for the next hour and a half.
And these are toy schnauzers, right?
They're toy schnauzers, yes. They are about 10 pounds. They are smaller than miniature schnauzers, and they are really quite the joy of my life. I hope they live forever, let's just say that.
They're 10 pounds each?
Yeah, they're 10 pounds each, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow, if you get another 7, you'll be up to the weight of my dog.
I know. I was about to ask about Miss Penny Lane. How much weight has she gained in the last couple of days?
You know, not much. You know, she's on a bit of a diet right now. She's getting more exercise now, too, so she's slimming down. But I think she's right around 85 to 90 pounds right now.
I think Sadie and Shelby would just be breakfast for her.
Oh, you know, she'd only be in danger. I mean, my dog, you know, likes all dogs, and it's just not mean, but, you know, doesn't tend to snack on other animals. My arm is what she tends to bite on, which
well,
I know
good.
Is a bad thing.
Then my dogs are safe.
Your dogs are safe. All right, let's get right into this. You know, I know a lot about you, and we're going to get to Fiesta Yarns, but I'd like it if you could give our listeners a little background on you. What's your history? Where do you come from, other than I know that you come from Junction, Texas?
And you love to tease me about that. you are correct. I grew up in Junction, Texas. It's this little bitty dot on the map on I-10, about halfway between Houston and El Paso. So once you get to Junction, Texas, you're about 450 miles from either of those two destinations, either Houston or El Paso. I grew up on a huge ranch. My family had a ranch in the hill country since the 40s, and I grew up riding horses and rounding up goats and cattle. So that's kind of how I'm a country girl, if you want to say that.
Doing the 4-H thing.
Oh, totally. You really didn't have a choice but to do 4-H if you lived in the country. I mean, I grew up, my brother and I grew up, we raised pigs to show. We did grass judging, which, oh my goodness, the show is not long enough possibly to explain what grass judging is. And so I did a little of everything. I did sewing and painting and crafting and, I mean, you name it, I have done it. A lot of my background is very art-oriented. I sold my very first painting when I was probably 9 or 10, and it was an oil painting. And the gentleman who purchased it owned a gallery over in Kerrville, which is about 45 minutes from Junction. And it was for his personal collection, and it hung in his gallery over the fireplace for decades. And when he decided to sell the or to close the art gallery and retire, he actually contacted my family and gave the painting back to my parents. And lo and behold, I actually have that painting in my house. So I did macrame with my mom. I did ceramics. I watercolored. I did drawing with pencils and charcoal, latch hook rugs. My great grandmother taught me how to crochet when I was knee high to a grasshopper. And I would sit around at my grandmother's house with my brother and rip fabric into 1-inch strips and crochet them into rugs, which those rugs were all over my grandmother's house for as long as I could remember. So I did a lot of things. I crafting and arts have always been in my life.
So you went doing that, and then you eventually headed out to the big campus. You, of course, went to Texas A&M.
I did, Giggum Aggies.
And what did you study there?
Well, it's funny because originally when I went to Texas A&M, I was accepted into aerospace engineering. And if any of you really know me well, you know that I do blonde math most of the time. So I'm not certain that that would have been the best career fit for me because I probably would have launched some rocket in the wrong direction because my math would have been bad. So Amy, who's my VP marketing, she and I sit around and do blonde math, even with a calculator. So math is not my forte, just saying. I ended up changing to something dramatically different than aerospace engineering my freshman year, and I changed to journalism. And so I actually have a BS in journalism with a minor in marketing and a minor in meteorology.
A weather girl.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the typical journalist. I didn't want to write for a newspaper, and I really didn't want that as a career. And so I really, applied science makes a huge amount of sense to me, and so it was just something that I understood. I grasped it completely, and I thought, gosh, I could get this journalism degree, and maybe I could end up doing something with my meteorology background and so or my minor. And so that was, originally maybe coming out of college, that might have been something I would have considered pursuing. And, I did get a minor in marketing. And so, my background is a little bit diverse. And, I think that's one of the great things about going to college. You find out some of the things that you're interested in, and then you dabble a little bit, and then you get out into the real world and you figure out what you really want to do with life.
Well, eventually you had to graduate. And you didn't move right into the yarn world. Now, it should be stated that before you went to college, you were the daughter of a small business person. And that has a huge effect on how you look at things. And you worked for your dad when you were younger, too.
I did. My goodness, you have an amazing memory. My parents were self-employed for as long as I can possibly remember. I grew up in a household of business owners. After my brother had graduated from college, he was a business owner. And really, even in high school, my brother was an entrepreneur. It's just, our blood runs business. I mean, I don't know how to do anything else, honestly, because I grew up that way. But my dad, my parents owned a clothing store in downtown Junction, Texas, and we carried everything from shoes and baby items to Wrangler jeans and work boots, and literally it was a department store, and it was the only department store in Junction. And I grew up waiting on customers from the time I was 9 or 10 years old, when my parents traveled to Dallas for Dallas Market and buying trips. I was still in school, so I didn't get to go, but I would end up at the business. It was called Randolph Department Store. And I would end up taking the bank deposits every day for my dad. And I can remember going down to the bank teller and, you know, reaching up over the counter to give the little money bag. And it, I mean, it was, you know, it's one of those memories that will always be burned in my mind.
Well, yeah. And I know what it's like to grow up in a household where the folks have a small business. It just never ends. And that's kind of what you do. It's kind of what you are. So you went away to college, and you did come out of college, and you did go to work for somebody else. You didn't go right into business for yourself.
That's right. I did not. But, you know, back to the being a small business owner, not only were my parents small business owners, but my parents were ranchers. And so a ranch never sleeps. And so my dad would work 6 days a week at the clothing store and then come home in the evenings and do ranch work as well. And then on Sundays would do ranch work as well. And so it was, you know, it's a never ending process when you grow up on a ranch. There's responsibilities all the time that have to be taken care of. But yes, I actually, when I graduated from Texas A&M, I actually ended up in Houston, and I went to work as the public relations manager at an auto dealership. Because at the time, it was really the only job I could find. And, I did have a lot of public relations classes and background. And it was the most challenging job, and everyone should at least work at a car dealership for about 6 months of their life, because you learn a tremendous amount about how picky people are about their automobiles. So it was a great learning experience, I have to say.
From there, you moved on. What was your next big thing?
Well, you know, I became really good friends with a guy who ran the fleet department at the auto dealer. And I actually worked at two different dealerships. I worked at a Lincoln Mercury dealership for a year out of college, and then I was really recruited by another dealership Toyota. And another brand, and right at the moment that escapes my mind, but you know, they sold 10,000 more cars a month than the Lincoln Mercury dealership, and it was much more stressful. And when I was at that dealership, I became really good friends with the fleet manager, and he literally said to me, "Jeannie, your talents here are being wasted. You have a great marketing mind, and you need to get a marketing job." And I said, "Well, do you know anybody?" And he said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I do." And he worked really closely with all the credit unions in the Houston area. And within a couple of days, he had made phone calls and gotten me an interview at a credit union just south of Houston. And I went down for the interview, and from my house to the credit union was easily an hour across Houston. I mean, Houston is gigantic. And I remember driving up in front of the building and parking, and I went, what was he thinking? There is no way I'm working here. And I went in, and I spent about an hour interviewing for the job, and literally I was holding a job description in my hand, and the CEO of the credit union, I looked at him and I said, "You know, if I had put on paper the job that I really wanted right out of college, this would be it. When do you want me to start?" And he offered me the job, and I went back to my car dealership job and gave my 2 weeks' notice and went to work in the credit union industry as VP marketing for the credit union. And I spent about 3.5 years doing that before I moved to Albuquerque the very first time.
Okay, so you got to Albuquerque. What's next on the agenda for you?
Well, you know, I knew that because Albuquerque was had a much higher cost of living, that I couldn't stay in the credit union world. And so I ended up in sales for one of the credit reporting agencies. And so I was a senior sales rep. And the cool thing was that I went out and I sold products, marketing products, to car dealerships and credit unions, and I had used them in those two jobs previously, so it was, I could really talk about success and hands-on experience. And so, you know, I have to say I was pretty good at that job, and it was a great job at 24 years of age, a great sales position.
And so there you were in Albuquerque, but you went away. You actually left Albuquerque for a while.
I did. I ended up getting married. I moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and ended up, Brad and I ended up opening a 5,000 square foot card and gift store in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so, you know, retail reared its ugly little head again at us. And so you know, I just can't get away from that dang retail. We have that business for, you know, probably 4.5 years all total. We opened in 99, and I think we ended up selling maybe in 2003. But in the meantime, we had already purchased Fiesta Yarns, and because he knew I really didn't like Tulsa and I wanted to get back to Albuquerque. And so I just kept trying to brainwash him into coming back here. And so I finally coerced him, and we found Fiesta Yarns. We were actually here looking at some property, and we decided we would look into a business, and, you know, the rest is really history. We found this little business, and, you know, I fell in love. And it was very interesting because when we came out to interview the owners, there was this beautiful, beautiful sweater laying on the table, and it was knitted in La Boheme, and this beautiful yarn we no longer make called Cocopelli. And it was knitted on like size 15 needles, and it was just like butter. I mean, oh my goodness, I just could not put the sweater down. And Brad used to always tease me that that was the most expensive sweater known to man, because that was the reason I bought Fiesta Yarns, was that sweater. and it's actually very interesting because I came across that sweater just the other day as we're getting ready to pack up and move to our new location. And it's a discontinued garment, obviously, because we don't make one of the fibers anymore. And I took it and I said, well, this is posterity. I cannot get rid of this garment. So I brought that sweater home. So it will be something that probably goes with me everywhere.
So you alluded to the fact that you were not the original owner of Fiesta Yarns. In fact, you bought Fiesta Yarns about 12 years ago. For our listeners, can you give the history of Fiesta Yarns? Because you are, I believe, the third owner, correct?
To my knowledge, yes. Fiesta Yarns started in 1982. There's a little history prior to that, but it's a little sketchy. But my understanding is that Fiesta Yarns was really originally started by a lady in Santa Fe. She owned a yarn store with a business partner in Santa Fe, and she started the Fiesta brand. And she would hand-dye the yarn and put it in their own store to sell. That's my understanding of how the company started. And in 1984-ish, the company was sold to a lady named Christella, who everyone really believes is the original owner because she owned it for, I don't know, 15 years or so. And when Christella had the company, she dyed everything in her house. She had yarn hanging outside of her home in Corrales, New Mexico, which is really just a little suburb of Albuquerque here, and yarn hanging in the trees. And literally, I do have pictures of yarn hanging in the trees in her backyard. And so in 1997, approximately, 1999, Christella had decided she wanted to retire. She wanted to get out of the business, and so she sold Fiesta Yarns to two women, and those two women really put Fiesta on a business footing. And up until that point, Christella had, you know, really done it more as a hobby. She didn't have standardized formulas or standardized skein weights. And so the two ladies who bought it, that was what they did. They put all the formulas down. They documented everything. They made everything consistent. And that's really when Fiesta Yarns became a business in wholesale, and people really started knowing the name Fiesta Yarns. The two ladies started going to the trade shows. I think Christella had done maybe the National Needle Arts Association trade show But really, these two ladies are the ones who put it on business footing. But their forte was not running a business long term. What they did really was buy small fledgling little companies, put them on a business footing, and then sell them for a profit. So they were business flippers, and nowadays everybody flips real estate, but they were business flippers. And so they owned it maybe 2.5 years, and along I came, and so on March 9th, 2001, I bought Fiesta Yarns. So that's a little bit of the history.
Yes, yes. And I know a little bit about how that worked, because there's a great story. You got to tell it. You went back to your local yarn store after you had basically bought it or decided to buy it. Can you tell our listeners that story?
I can. We still own the card and gift store. And in the shopping center behind our store, there was a little yarn store. And in our gift store, we had a little postal substation. So we had gotten to know Jan, the owner of the yarn store, because she always came in to ship packages practically every day. And so when I had not knitted or crocheted in, 20 years. I mean, I had not done any fiber art since I had been a little kid. And so I went over and said, hey, Jan, this is what I'm looking to do. Can you give me like a refresher lesson? And so I sat down with her, and in an hour she showed me how to bind on, cast off, knit, purl, yarn over, all that sort of stuff in an hour. And she just kind of looked at me and she went, wow, you really learn very fast. I said, well, you know, it's like riding a bike. Once you've known something, you always sort of really pick it up quick. And so that's how that all began. Was I went and took a lesson, a refresher lesson, and we packed up our house and moved to Albuquerque, and we left our manager in charge of the gift store, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
Well, along the way, you had to learn a lot of things. I mean, running the business is one thing, and you've dealt with wholesale accounts and consumers before, but you had to learn about, and you know about color, but you had to learn about dyeing, and you had to learn about fashion, and you just had to learn a lot of stuff. I mean, that must have been kind of a daunting task.
You know, it was, and I think there were probably many bets around Albuquerque that I wouldn't make it past the first year because I didn't know anything about fiber. And, when somebody says that to you, I'm one of those people that, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. And so, you know, I did. I proved people wrong. Nobody thought I would succeed. And what they really didn't realize is that I have a really strong color background. I have a strong art background. And it's really things I never talked about. I mean, you know, I don't really like tooting my own horn like that. And so I think I was sort of the stealth business owner in the fiber industry because nobody really knew what my background was and that I really had all of these experiences that would maybe make me successful. And so I really played off of everything, my marketing background, my art background, my color background, and all of my experiences have helped me build Fiesta to what it is.
Well, and you continue to learn. Folks, I wanted to drop this in because it just happened and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. You just had your second photo shoot in which you yourself were the photographer.
You are correct. Yes, I did.
So you've got a business owner and a color picker and a fashion guru, and now you're shooting your stuff. And folks, if you're interested in what her stuff looks like, head up to fiestayarns.com. There's some slides moving just on the top. I mean, beautiful images. And you picked up photography fairly quickly. You want to talk about that?
Well, sure. I love talking about my photography. But, you know, again, it was one of those things. I've been doing photography since I was a little kid. And my dad is a great landscape photographer. And, you know, so I learned a lot about photography from him and just watching him. But the difference between me and my dad is he is definitely a technician of the art. I mean, he knows how to set the camera and just get everything perfect. But from an art standpoint, he doesn't really have the artsy eye that I do. And so the types of pictures that I take are really completely different than what he loves taking. He does landscape. He couldn't take a people picture to save his life. Because he's not into taking people pictures. He just doesn't know how to set the camera up or compose the shots or anything like that. So, you know, but I grew up taking pictures. And, you know, one of my frustrations in owning Fiesta was that I had hired a photographer to do all of my garment shots for me. And at one time we shot them all in the studio, sort of on gray and light blue backgrounds. And I would take in magazines to my photographer and say, you know, I really want us to go out in the field. I really want us to get out of the studio, and I want my pictures to look like this. And I would show him, like, the Chico's magazine, and I would show him the Chico's catalog and Knitters magazine and Vogue Knitting and Architectural Digest and all of these magazines that I subscribed to. I would take them in and say, well, this is what I want the photos to really look like. And you know what he told me? He literally said to me, Jeannie, I can't do that. And I said, what do you mean you can't do it? These people can obviously do it. So what's wrong? Do you not have the right equipment? Tell me what I'm missing here. And so there went a time for probably 3 years that I did not have a photo shoot at all because I didn't want him to take the photographs because I didn't want it to be that way anymore, and I didn't want that look anymore, and he wouldn't do what I asked him to do, and he was quite cranky on photo shoots, I have to say. And so so I don't know, at some point I was at Stitches, and Alexi Zanakis was actually the photographer of XRX and Knitters Magazine, was giving a photo class, and I said, oh, you know, I think maybe I should really do this because maybe I'll learn something about textile photography that I don't understand, that I don't get. And so I took Alexi's class, and I have to say, as you know, Alexi is my muse, and he has inspired me beyond belief. And so Alexi went with me. I took his class twice, I think, and then he went with me. I was honored to get him to go with me, and he helped me purchase all of my photography equipment. Now, what I forgot to tell him, I should have made him pay for it because it was so expensive.
It is expensive, you know, and his teacher once told him, you know, as a photographer, you can have the eye, but you're still only as good as the equipment you have. And, you know, he's proved that point many times.
Well, it is so, so, so true. If you do not have the right camera and you do not have the right lenses, you can never, ever get the photos that you really want. And that is something I hear in the back of my mind all the time as I'm shooting. And so even after I got my camera equipment, I went for another 18 months not doing a photo shoot. And Alexi kept telling me, you can do it, you can do it. And you kept telling me, you can do it, you can do it. And I was petrified. I was totally petrified, scared out of my mind. I don't know how to run a photo shoot. What if I get terrible photos? You know, I was, you know, that self-doubt that you go through, all of us have it. And there was a moment, it was an epiphany, like a defining moment. I woke up one day and I said, okay, Jeannie, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing that can happen is that you won't get photographs that are any better than the photographer that you used to use. And you might get lucky and you might get better stuff. So just go for it. And that's, I had to have that mental shift, and that's what happened. I finally decided, okay, worst case scenario, I won't get anything better than I had before, but at least I'll have something. And so we went out, and I hired two beautiful, amazing models. I had Scrim Holders, and Amy was my was the model dresser and merchandiser, And we went out and we did it. And it was, as you know, we did a 2-day photo shoot last August. And I sweated so much that, I mean, I was wringing wet like somebody had thrown me into a pool. That's how hot it was here in Albuquerque in August. And it's a little humid here that time of year as well. And I tell you, it was the funnest 2 days I think I have ever had in my life. It took me, I don't know, a couple of weeks to come down off of that adrenaline high, honestly. So.
And so you just had a follow-up shoot. You had to get a few shots too. I know you're going to be doing another one, you know, when you get back from the show. How was you had, you know, 1 day shoot, and you decided to schedule it, I think, in 109 degree weather, right?
Yeah, it wasn't quite that hot, but almost. You know, I had been wanting to do this photo shoot at the end of May, and when you're coordinating the schedules of 7 or 8 people, support staff, to make a photo shoot run, it's like herding cats. Nobody is available on the same day. And so at the end of May, it was still absolutely gorgeous here. The days were, you know, 85 at most, 7 to 10% humidity. It was perfect weather to have a photo shoot. Nobody would be sweating. Nobody would be glistening. And we couldn't get everybody coordinated. And so when we finally did, 2.5 weeks later, we were having a heat wave. And we have had... We had 2 days of 100-degree temperatures, I think 2 days of 99-degree temperatures, and we're out in the blazing, sweltering sun doing a photo shoot. And it was so hot, even at 10:30 in the morning, it was about 10:30 in the morning, we were up in an elementary school, and everything around us was really concrete, and the sun was reflecting everywhere. And at one point, the scrim person was not holding the scrim on the model. He was holding the scrim over my feet because my feet were on fire because the sun was burning my feet. And so we are hunkered under an umbrella protecting me and the camera, and he's underneath the umbrella with the scrim on my feet. It was comical, and I think there's actually a picture up on the Fiesta Yarns Facebook page, too, that shows that. It was like so surreal because he was scrimming me, not the model. It was so funny.
Well, I've seen the shots, and you have some great shots in there. I think I want to tease you for a minute, though. You had, I understand, about 25 garments that you shot that day, correct? In 1 day.
That is correct, a one-day shoot
with 2 models. That's a lot to move through in 1 day. Jeannie, how many images did you bring back from the shoot?
I believe I shot 4,500 photos on Wednesday.
And folks, this makes sense, right? It, you know, not only do you want good shots, it's a numbers game. The more you shoot, the greater chance you can. And in the age where we're not developing film anymore and it's all digital assets, why not? It doesn't really cost anything if you've got the chips. But trying to sort through 4,500 images has got to be exhausting just by itself.
Oh, well, you know, you and I went through them, and I think we were on the phone for 2.5 hours, and you were moving at lightning speed. I'm like, what page are you on? And you're like, I'm on page 329. I'm like, I'm still on page 310. How did you get over there so quick? Did you look at all the pictures in between? And he goes, I think you said to me, dear woman, we must get through these or we'll be here all day long. And the challenge, I have to say, I am going to pat myself on the back here just an itty bitsy tiny bit. There are really so many great shots, it's hard to choose. And part of that is the photography. The other part of that is the models are so amazing. They're beautiful. They know how to speak to the camera and pose in front of the camera. And it is painful to go through them because there are so many. And as you remember, last time our photo shoot, I had a really hard time focusing. And so when we went through all the shots, we really only had 1 or 2 that were completely in focus and that were reproduction quality. And so it was actually way easier. On that 2-day photo shoot last August, I had about 4,500 shots, just to put it in perspective. Those 2 days, I shot about 100 shots on average per garment. And this time, I shot 200 shots per garment. And every single one of them is in focus. I bet there's not a half a percent of them that are out of focus for some reason, and it's truly mind-boggling and a bit painful to go through and try to narrow them down. And I kind of laugh about this because I wish they'd have been out of focus. It would be a lot easier task.
Well, congratulations on it. I've seen the pics. They're great. You're going to have great pics for your website and for your products. And let's move on to another subject real quickly. Let's talk about Fiesta Yarns. Let's talk about you, and let's talk about Knitters Magazine in context. So the first question I want to ask is, how long has Fiesta Yarns been advertising and supporting Knitters Magazine? And folks, there's a reason I'm going to ask this, and you'll understand the reason in just a minute.
Such a nice setup, Benjamin. Well, I believe I have been, or Fiesta Yarns, because I haven't always been the owner, Fiesta Yarns has advertised in Knitters Magazine since K number one, and I believe we are on issue K111. So you guys have been around 31 years or 32 years, and Fiesta Yarns has been advertising all that time, except maybe for three or four issues.
And I think that in issue one, you're like one of two companies that are still around that has a garment in that. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, when you guys did K100, which was your 25th anniversary, you guys highlighted the two or three companies that are still in existence that also had a garment and or advertised in K number one, and we are one of those companies.
All right. So there we have a long-standing history of Fiesta Yarns. You yourself have been involved with, as a Knitters Magazine advertiser with garments merchandised in Knitters Magazine in various Fiesta Yarns for almost 12 years. And so there's always got to be one garment that makes the cover. Jeannie, how many times has Fiesta Yarns, the garment made in Fiesta Yarns, made the front cover of Knitters Magazine in the 111 issues that we put out?
One time.
And what was that one time?
So that was the most recent issue, K111.
This is a private joke between the two of us. Jeannie and I have been friends for many years. Issue after issue comes out. Of course, she's happy with the pieces. Rick and the designers do a good job, but she just never seems to roll into having the garment be the cover shot. And so it's been an ongoing joke that, you know, this is going to happen, you know, pretty close to the heat death of the universe. I think you were pretty stunned. And so finally, you got a garment. It's on the cover. Was there a sense of disbelief when you realized that you had made the cover?
I truly believe that I was so utterly shocked, I thought hell had frozen over. I just was speechless. I could not even enjoy the moment because I thought it was a setup. I thought it was fake. Because there's no way that I'm on the cover of Knitters Magazine. There's just no possible way. I mean, I've just resigned myself that Fiesta Yarns will never be on the cover. And I understand how that cover shot gets picked. You can't buy your way on to the cover of Knitters Magazine. You can't schmooze anybody. You can't bribe anybody. It is truly, I think Alexi actually is the one who ultimately picks the cover of Knitters Magazine, and there is a set of guidelines and rules for that photo. And I just knew it would never be me. And so I had resigned myself that, you know, why bother looking? I know I'm never going to be on the cover. It's just my lot in life. and when you sent that one little marketing piece to me, and you said, oh, did you get the e-newsletter today? And I said, yeah, I kind of briefly looked at it. And he goes, well, did you look at the cover of the little magazine they had mocked up in there? And I went, well, no, not really. I was busy. I mean, it was an e-newsletter about something that, you know, at that moment really didn't concern me, to be honest. And so you made me go pull up the email, and you said, well, why don't you look at the cover? And I looked at it, and I went, oh, my God, that looks like my yarn. And you remember that moment? I mean, I was in shock. I was in utter disbelief. I mean, I just knew I would be dead before I was ever on the cover of Knitters Magazine.
Well, Hopefully, it won't take till issue 222 for PSTRNs to jump on that. But you are right. There is actually no politics. There's no nothing. It is truly an agnostic process. That is done to choose. And I mean, we have had first time advertisers make it onto the cover, and there you are, one of our oldest advertisers that just made the cover. So, it just kind of is the way it is. But let's go back to this cover shot. No, please, go ahead.
No, I said if it takes until K-222, you and I both are going to be very old and gray. So let's hope it doesn't take that long for VSDRN to get back on the cover. But I've tried to bribe people. Believe me, Fiber Hooligans, I have tried desperately to bribe people. It doesn't work. Just don't even try it. It just doesn't work. So...
And folks, before you start thinking, I don't pick the cover, so don't petition me. I have no power. I really don't have any power. If you understand the structure of my company, there are so few things that I have any power on. Essentially, I can hit the mute button on this program, and that's the extent of my real power in the world. All right, so let's talk about your garment in the issue, because it's a pretty garment. What do you tell our listeners about the piece?
Well, it really is a great piece. It's very classic. It's an easy, quick knit, and it's actually done with two different fibers, linette, which is a 70% linen, 30% cotton, done in a chainette construction, and gelato, which has been around for decades. And gelato is 100% rayon ribbon, and those two yarns are knitted together in the garment to make that beautiful sweater that's on the cover. And so it's very simple, it's easy, it's quick, a great combination. Rick really understands VSD yarns and how to utilize it well in garments, and he knows that the yarn should speak for itself. So he never gets really fancy with stitches because they just get hidden in all the color. And so kudos to Rick and the design team. I think they did that sweater on the cover.
She's speaking, of course, of Rick Mondragon, the editor of Knitters Magazine for Fiber Hooligans, that just wanted a little clarification on that. Yeah, I believe it. It's a wonderful piece, and I think it's pretty popular out there, too.
So far, it certainly has been. Before I actually ever received my copy of Knitters Magazine, we already had people buying those two yarns in the colorway shown in the garment off of the website. So we knew immediately it was going to be a pretty popular piece. And I think it will be for a really long time because it's a very classic, just a beautiful garment, easy to knit. And I think it'll be around for a while.
Oh, I think so too. All right, well, let's move on from Knitters Magazine and let's talk about your involvement with Stitches. You are a strong, strong Stitches supporter, and I'd like you to tell our folks kind of the story about how you got involved with Stitches.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because I really never knew anything about Stitches. And when you're a wholesale manufacturer and you don't sell retail, you don't necessarily – or I didn't. I really didn't pay attention to all the retail shows out there. Shame on me. But, you sort of get that tunnel vision and you do your thing every day and we just don't pay attention. And so really the way I found out about Stitches originally was that my dear friend Susan Maraca over at Collage Yarns kept talking about this Stitches thing. And I'm like, I've never heard of this Stitches thing. It's like, what are you doing? I don't understand. Where is this? Where do you go? I mean, I was baffled, quite honestly, that Susie was doing Stitches. And so she kept talking about it and how she was a sponsor and she would go and set up her booth, and she wasn't selling retail. She was just talking to consumers and handing out little samples and stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of an interesting concept. And then she told me who owned it. And I said, oh, well, the first time Benjamin and I met, we really didn't care for each other so much. So, you know, I don't know if I'll ever do that Stitches thing. And that's very true, isn't it? We sort of didn't get off on the right foot when we first met.
No, there was no love lost between you and I in the early days, no.
Yeah, so, you know, we won't, you know, point fingers at whose fault that was or anything. But anyway, again, folks, an inside joke, so we won't tell that story today and bore you. But it was really interesting because there was a moment in time about four and a half years ago or so, I received an email from you out of the blue. And you told me you were going to be in Albuquerque and that you would like to come by and visit with me. And, of course, I was like, what does he want? Why would he want to come see me? And the funny thing was that same week I was getting emails from other publishers and other manufacturers like, hey, I'm going to be in Albuquerque. I'd like to come by and see your facility. And I'm like, what is going on in the fiber world that all these people are coming to Albuquerque? Because I certainly don't know about anything going on here that all these people would be in town. And come to find out, everybody was going to Santa Fe for the Craft Yarn Council meeting, your annual meeting. And I had no idea, and that's not something like a small company like me would know about anyway, because I think you have to, you know, people like Michaels and Lion Brand and those kind of big companies are on that, the Craft Yarn Council. And so I had had a lunch meeting with someone like at 11, and that person had left, and you and Elaine Rowley, the R in XRX, show up, and we just got talking, and you were talking about Knitters Magazine and you know, your history with the company and Elaine's history with the company, talking about Fiesta Yarns and advertising and all sorts of stuff. And that's really how you and I got to talking about Stitches. And I think I literally asked you, so, Benjamin, why don't you tell me about this little thing you call Stitches? Because I have no idea what this is. And so that's how we got really involved. And I think how that all came about afterwards was that you really wanted us to come and be a guest at Stitches to really experience what Stitches is all about. And so like 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, because I can't – 4 years ago – we came to Stitches East in Hartford, Connecticut, as your guests.
Yes, you did. I remember that conversation. We were still in your office. Our meeting went so long that Elaine and I had to take you out to dinner. I recall that. But I remember being in your office and talking to you about this stuff. And I remember one of the things that I heard from you that, you know, really kind of touched me and I could relate to is that you were out there in Albuquerque, didn't know what Stitches was, and you kind of admitted to feeling isolated and outside the track. You know, as somebody who does business in the industry from South Dakota, I have felt like that many times. And I realized, okay, this is like one of those common things. I can certainly understand where that's coming from. Folks, you know, a great majority of our industry is oftentimes controlled by both coasts. And, you know, unless you're going to the shows and getting out to those places, you really can get unbelievably isolated. And it's not really good for the soul. And so I remember telling you, hey, come be my guest at Midwest. And I think you had some kind of thing going on. And so I think I twisted your arm and you came to our first Hartford show. And so you'd never been to a consumer show like a Stitches before. What did you do and how did you like it?
Well, let me go back and address something that you said is that, you know, I really did feel very isolated because even though we have such a rich fiber history here in the Southwest, it's not in knitting and crocheting. It's in rugs and in more industrial sort of things. And so I always felt very isolated. And being a manufacturer on top of that makes you doubly isolated if you're not in one of the yarn meccas of the country. And really, 80% of the industry happens on the East and the West Coast, and 20% happens everywhere else. And that's really driven by population. And so if you're not in one of those high, densely populated areas, you really do feel left out. you know, in Albuquerque at the time you and I had this discussion, I think there were two yarn stores for a population of over 700,000 people. And so there, it just wasn't something, I didn't really feel connected. But to answer your question about Stitches, what was your question about Stitches now? I'm sorry.
Well, you came to your first show. You were going to cancel. I didn't let you cancel. You came. You took some classes. You just walked around. You went to the events. What was your experience like? You'd never been to one before.
No, I mean, I had no idea what Stitches was. I had never hardly even heard of Stitches except for Susie at Collage and then what you and Elaine had talked about. And, you know, at that point in our ownership or my ownership of Fiesta Yarns, I was feeling pretty uninspired. And I really needed to find, you know, passion again and love for what I was doing. And, you know, running a business is not easy. And the height of this industry in 2006, we had 14 or 15 in full-time employees. We practically ran two shifts of dyeing. I think I had three full-time dyers dyeing 8 hours a day. I mean, it was run fast in order to keep up. And that can really burn you out quick. And so I think both you and I felt a kindred spirit over that as well, is that we were both feeling a little uninspired. And by going to Stitches, it was unbelievably eye-opening. I remember just the vibe and the heartbeat of Stitches. It inspired me. And I think at that very first show, I coordinated with Webb's America's Yarn Store, and I stood in their booth, and they had Fiesta Yarns, and so I talked to consumers and got to meet them and everything. And I think I took some classes. I took a class from Jane Slicer Smith, who was one of my faves in the industry, I think one of her color classes. And I was so inspired and so overwhelmed. And it was kind of like the photography thing. I came home and I was on an adrenaline high for a couple of weeks because I had really found a new direction, and I had ignited my creativity again and my direction. And it really gave me a lot of focus that I so desperately needed to be able to get back on track. And so I will always be thankful to you for that, because it was really a defining moment in the history of Fiesta Yarns.
Well, you're very welcome. I mean, you seemed like you had a good time there in that first show. And you, before you got involved, you came to another couple of shows. You went from East, and I think you did the next West as well. And folks, for you that haven't gone to a Stitches, doing Stitches West is like, what would you say about how, it's just a lot more.
It's just a lot more of everything. There are more vendors, more consumers. I think you've hit the 12,000 mark almost with consumers going through the door in that 3-day show. It's fiber on steroids, man, and it is a complete overload and stimulation. And I can remember on Sunday afternoon, I think I might have been trying to get something for Webs or, you know, get a yarn or something. And I couldn't even get down the aisle. There were so many people on a Sunday afternoon at Stitches West. And I can't put into words how unbelievably awesome Stitches West is. It's the biggest of the four shows. It's just, you know, I'm speechless really about trying to describe it to somebody, because if you've never experienced it, it's hard to put into words.
Well, I agree, and I love going to them too, although I sort of have to be there. So eventually it came on board as a vendor and finally a sponsor. Can you tell us about that transition?
You know, our first Stitches show where we were a vendor with Stitches Midwest 4 years ago. This coming up here in August will be our fourth time on the floor as a vendor. And we came in as a sponsor of Stitches at Stitches West 3 years ago. And then we have been a sponsor ever since. Because we felt like it was really important in building our brand that we be a sponsor.
And the sponsorship experience, you're on the floor most of the time. You don't get to do a lot of education. So you're really stuck with only being able to do the events. Do you miss not being able to take the classes?
Absolutely, because the classes is really what inspires me to knit more than I do. And I don't ever knit for pleasure, I hate to say. I'm always knitting swatches and knitting something for Fiesta. And so for me to ever get the opportunity to knit for myself is a rare, rare occurrence. Because truly at the end of the day, I come home and I'm too tired to knit for pleasure.
Knitting in your copious spare time, yeah. So, but you do go to the events. You go to the opening days. It's always good to see you in the opening day crowd, and you do the night events. Do you have a favorite of the events?
You know, you asked me that yesterday when we were prepping for this interview, and, you know, I think I'm going to stick with my original response, which is the fashion show on Friday night is really my favorite event.
Any, you want to elaborate the reason why?
You guys do the fashion show better than anybody else in the industry, and it's really inspiring to see all the garments come down the runway and the commentary and how comfortable Rick and Fontel are up on stage. And, you know, not only is it great to see my Fiesta garments come down the runway, but all the other stuff that is put in there by all the other vendors and manufacturers. And everybody gets this little program, and I'm always circling stuff. You know, Drew Imborski sits next to me, and we chat typically back and forth about, oh, gosh, that's really an awesome garment, and look at the shaping on that, and look at the lace pattern. And, you know, I'm circling different things, and I'm inspired by everybody's work. And there have been numerous times where I've gone and purchased yarn or pattern for something I've seen on the runway that is somebody else's product. You know, I can't live by Fiesta alone. I have to be inspired, and so I knit with other people's yarn. And so it's a visual overload. It's about creativity and about learning. And, you know, I'm a sponge. I'm constantly soaking up everything. You know, I read like 20 different magazines, all sorts, business to business magazines to architectural magazines, and I'm constantly soaking up information. And so to go to the fashion show is, again, a very educational experience. You can see trends. You can see color that's going on. I mean, it is my favorite event of Stitches.
Let's move back from the events and talk about your personal experience. In the traditional way that Fiesta Yarns used to work, you had very limited interaction with the consumer. And of course, you know, you do sell direct, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But Stitches gives you a really hyper-focused group of knitters and crocheters that you get to interact with at the consumer level. Can you talk about what that means to you and what you get out of that?
Yeah, you know, Benjamin, you get a front seat at Stitches to feedback from the consumers and what consumers love and don't love. And again, it's one of those things as a manufacturer selling strictly wholesale, you don't get that feedback. You get feedback from the store, the local yarn shop, but that is different feedback than what the consumer has. There are two different priorities here when you're a consumer or a yarn store. And, you know, I understand that there's a difference in thinking between those two groups. And when you sell strictly wholesale and you don't do shows of any kind to get in front of the consumer, the feedback you get is strictly one-dimensional. And by getting to Stitches and talking to consumers, boy, did we find out a lot about the product and truly how much people adore and love the product. And feedback on different colorways and maybe things they don't like or the garment they don't like or a garment they love. And I think I've told you this story, but at one of the first stitches we did, maybe the first couple, this lady walks into the booth and she's standing in front of all of the Lava Lamb. And she said to me, she said, "Oh, the very first expensive yarn I ever bought was Lava Lamb." And it's like she was cradling it like a baby and rocking it. I mean, that's how emotional she got about the yarn. And I stood there, it practically brought tears to my eyes, because where else would I have ever gotten that feedback except at a retail event like Stitches? Because that is not the feedback you get from the local yarn store. You get different feedback that's also positive or negative, but in a different way. And it really, again, it inspired me. It made me want to do better. And so we love talking to the consumers and what they make with the product and what color is their favorite. And, you know, they're Fiesta stalkers. We've sort of, you know, named them stalkers. And you know, they come to the booth and you know, they're just excited because, you know, we are always doing some fun promotion or giving away something in the booth. And it's inspiring to them and they get excited. And it's really, it's a great experience. I can say inspired 100 more times, but it really is inspiring.
Well, I've been very surprised by, you know, some of the things that have happened to you. You are a test case, and so I'm going to lay this out for our listeners a little bit. You're one of the larger yarn suppliers out there who is taking care of their shops but also selling directly out in the market, which is not always the most popular concept in the world. I want to go on record of saying that I believe that you're doing a good job with your shops out there and making sure that you don't undercut them. And, you know, before I move on to that, I'd like you to explain how you protect your shops.
You know, we have actually been selling retail for 5 years. And one of the things we really decided early on, if we were going to sell retail, and as you know, I am a strong proponent of multiple channels of distribution, because you must have more than one leg to stand on at any given time or you become very wobbly. And so we decided early on that if we were going to sell retail, we must feel good about that and that we must be able to sleep at night. And it was a moral and ethical issue for us that we not undercut our stores on pricing. And we still stick to that on a day-to-day basis on the Fiesta site or at Stitches. Our price is 10% higher than suggested retail at your local yarn store. And it was just something we felt like we really needed to do. And so if you want Fiesta product, you can get it cheaper at your local yarn store. We really, in essence, wanted it to be slightly a punishment, if that's the right word, to buy from us, because we really still wanted to encourage consumers to buy at their local yarn store, to form that relationship and have that support at the local level, and come to us as a last resort. And that's really how we originally built our direct sales, was selling above Keystone or suggested retail.
And that's the point I wanted to make. And I know that on occasion you've gotten some negative feedback about that, and you've also gotten some positive feedback about that. Can you tell us kind of both of those stories?
Yeah, you know, it's when you do something and you're the first to do it, you have the target on your head. And we certainly took a few complaints about it. But going into it, we just said, you know what, we're going to be honest and forthright with people. And when we have a store, and we haven't really had a store who's complained about it at Stitches or that I'm aware of anywhere recently, when we had complaints, we would say, you know what, I'm happy to talk to you about it. You know, what can we do to help support you? You know, when a consumer calls in, we will ask them where they live, and we will try to direct them to a local yarn store. And, you know, how can we help you? We have a loaner garment program. We can help you with, you know, signage or whatever you want. And, it's, you know, it's a 50-50 toss-up. Stores that are really offended by it, it doesn't matter what the conversation was. They just, you know, they're going to be upset about it. And the other ones who really get why we had to do it really look me in the eye and say, Jeannie, we understand that. And really the reason we really had to start selling retail was that if we wanted Fiesta Yarns to be around for another, you know, 30 years, we were going to have another distribution channel other than wholesale. And as you and I have talked about, this is one of the few industries where manufacturers don't sell both wholesale and retail. I mean, you and I have talked about how many other industries the manufacturers sell direct. The clothing industry, the hobby industry, the electronics industry, the computer industry, so many of those other industries, the manufacturers sell direct and also sell wholesale. And that's that has been one of the challenges in the yarn industry, is that it is really a small niche industry, and it's very hard to step outside the box and do something that other people are not doing.
And yet it has worked out for you, because I have seen you at the show. I mean, I'm not talking about TNA, I'm talking about Stitches, open wholesale accounts.
We do. Stitches West, for instance, will open 3 to 5 wholesale accounts, because what happens is the store owners are there shopping for new product, and they're looking to see what's hot and new and fresh things to bring into the store. And invariably, they stand outside of our booth, and they see how busy we are, and they see the pattern support that we have. And really, they see how much fun we're having. And they walk in, and they say, so do you sell wholesale? And half of them say, I've never even heard of your company. And I said, well, of course we sell wholesale. Here's a wholesale packet. And I'm happy to get you started right here at the show. This is your one and only opportunity on Sunday, if you're still here, to come by right out of the booth, open bag, basically. And that's actually very enticing to a new store owner, because they can immediately get started. They can go home and put it on the shelf on Monday morning. And that's really exciting to them. They don't have to wait for it. And I probably open up 3 to 5 wholesale accounts at Stitches West, and the other 3 shows, you know, maybe 1 to 2 accounts at each show. And as you and I talked about this years ago, and we were talking about selling retail, this was one of the things that I said, if this works exactly the way it should work, I should not only be able to build my brand at the consumer level, but I should be able to build my brand at the wholesale level, because I should be able to open up wholesale accounts at Stitches as well. And it's worked exactly the way we thought it should. And so that's the beauty of it. It's been a win-win situation for us.
That's great. All right. I'd like to move on from this, because I just wanted to make sure that people were clear about your business model, and so that we could move on to your website and your online marketing campaign. You have a great website. It's retail and wholesale support. There's a lot of information there. There's an e-com system there, and then you have a newsletter campaign. Let's start with your website. Okay. Tell me about your new website. It's about a year old.
The website launched on October 5th, and I am proud to say it's powered by Hopscotch, which is your company.
Yes, Jeannie was one of our original beta testers. I think Myra Wood was the first person to put her site on under her domain. Jeannie had a much more complex site and helped kind of design our e-com system for Hopscotch Web. And you got it up, you got it running, you're running it yourself.
I do run it myself, proudly. You know, you have somebody else in the chat room, too, that also has a website powered by Hopscotch, and that's Drew Imborski, a.k.a. the Crochet Dude.
That is correct.
You know, one of One of the challenges that every small business owner has, I think all of us can feel this pain. We all sing the same song. Website design and understanding how to do a website is our biggest challenge. We know we need one. We know we need e-commerce. But how do we do it? I don't know anything about HTML code. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. I mean, it's overwhelming. And TSG Yarns has always had a website, mainly static information, no e-commerce. And 5 years ago when we launched retail sales, we launched our first e-com site with a open source software called Joomla, J-O-O-M-L-A. And it was supposed to be the easiest way to do e-commerce, very user-friendly. And I have to say, I would not agree with that at all. And everybody can have their own opinion about Joomla. But the last year prior to us launching our Hopscotch website, you and I tried to make changes on that old site. And for full disclosure, I think you actually have quite a bit of coding experience. You kind of know what you're doing with all that HTTP stuff.
Yeah, I do.
And we spent 4 hours trying to change like one little set of pictures on our homepage with when it was still powered by Joomla. And I think you and I finally gave up. And that was the conversation where I said, okay, Benjamin, we're having a come to Jesus meeting because we have got to get our Hopscotch site up. I don't care what it takes, but we are going to get this launched. And I really think I practically, you know, beat a website out of you finally because, you know, as people know, in trying to design a website company from scratch, it's a big task. And so being a beta tester, you and I was constantly putting in bugs and things didn't work. And, you know, it's very much the normal as you're going through software testing. And, well, for full disclosure, this is really not software. It's all web-based, but it's easier just to call it software. But, it's funny because Pam from Halos of Hope has written in the chat room, Joomla equals painful. I finally told you this is do or die for me. Our website had not been updated really in a year. I wasn't able to add new colorways. I couldn't add new products because I seriously could not figure it out. And again, for full disclosure, I know a little bit. I have taken a coding class. I know how to write code. I basic code. And so I should be able to operate Joomla if it is the most user-friendly open source thing out there. And it was painful. I mean, I think I was kicking and screaming on many occasions over my old website. And so I think I finally put a deadline on you. And I said, you're killing me. You're just killing me. And we have to launch this thing. And so we launched our website on October 5th of last year.
Yes, you did. And you did a soft launch. You didn't go crazy about it. And it was less than 30 days that you really put into place your marketing schema. And, okay, so great. You have this website, and you have the ability to show some pretty pages and to build pretty pages easy, and you have the ability to sell things, and you created or, you know, designed a coupon code system so that you could discount things 100%, and the system allows you to upload a pattern so that you can actually sell downloadable PDFs or ebooks through it. And, you know, there's a lot that the cart does pretty simply. But then you took that all and you turned it into a marketing strategy. And can you tell our listeners what that strategy was?
Absolutely. Because it's something that we are really proud of. You know, being the marketing person, I understood two things, and that if I was going to be successful, I needed to have frequency and reach. And I was going to have to reach a lot more people with my website and my marketing, and I was going to have to do it on a consistent, frequent basis. So Amy, who's my VP marketing, she and I sat down, and we said, okay, how much is too much? We looked at major retailers out in the marketplace, like Target and Amazon and Barnes and Noble and Hundreds of sites, Walmart. We looked at everything. We looked at websites in all types of industries and signed up for newsletters and how often do we get them and what's the content. And we basically decided we didn't want to kill people with e-newsletters, and we also needed a fine line between, you know, fine line between too much and too little, really. So we finally settled that if we emailed out twice a week with a valid message and action message, that we wouldn't irritate people. So our strategy became, and backing up only a tiny bit, but literally the week before we launched this website, I spent 6 days sequestered at my house doing nothing but converting patterns and reformatting patterns to PDFs to get them loaded to the website. Because I also knew that I could not launch my website without having at least 80% of the patterns up there as pattern downloads, because we know that patterns drive sales. Patterns drive yarn sales. So moving forward, we basically said, okay, the strategy I think we should wrap our heads around and commit to it is that we are going to drive traffic by giving away free patterns. So for those of you who are on my e-newsletter list, and you know that we give out one pattern on Thursday, it's called Free Pattern Thursday, very clever of us to call it Free Pattern Thursday, and that pattern is free when you put in a coupon code. And, I mean, it works great. I think our biggest number of downloads is, you know, I don't know, over 3,000 in a couple of day time period. I think one time we had so many downloads we crashed the website, which, I don't know, it kind of made me feel good that we crashed the website, but nobody could download the pattern. So, and then we decided, well, now part two of this is driving yarn sales, so what are we going to do? So we follow that up every Monday with a email that's a special specifically on the yarn that was for the pattern that was free on Thursday. So, for instance, last Thursday was the tag-along top that's done in Lynette. Well, this is a bad example because I changed my email for today, so never mind that example. But we have done the Gracie's Lace Caplet as a free pattern on Thursday and then followed up on Monday with a sale on that single yarn. We typically do not do site-wide sales. I think since we launched, we've done 2 site-wide sales. Again, trying not to irritate our local yarn stores because we want to be very conscious of our relationship with them. And so we really just discount 99% of the time. We only discount the fiber that free pattern from Thursday is in. And it has really transformed our business. And every month we have more pattern downloads, we have more users to our site, we have more yarn sales, and ultimately it builds our brand. And who better to build my brand than me? Because I'm the one who's passionate and excited about it, and I'm the one who understands the brand really better than anybody else. And so as a business owner, that's truly one of my responsibilities. And I believe we've been very successful at that in building our brand.
So, yes, I mean, you've been doing a lot of traffic. And I think you told me even in April you had your best month ever, which is odd for an April in our industry.
Actually, that was May. I think we're still in June, I think.
Yes.
No, May. May was our best month ever for e-com. And January, interestingly enough, was actually our second best month.
Okay. Well, obviously you're getting the message out there. I think people are appreciating, you know, getting on your list and being able to get that free pattern. And you know, they don't have to buy any yarn to get the free pattern. They can just keep getting the free pattern if they want it. Folks, if you're interested in joining that list, head up to fiestayarns.com. There is a newsletter link right on the front page, and make sure you get that. So this would be a good time for us to stop before we go any further. You had asked me yesterday if we could do something special. If we could give one of our live listeners away something today. Do you want to do that?
Oh, sure.
Okay, live listeners. We're going to give something away to a caller. I'm going to put the number in the chat room, and I'm going to tell you what it is right now. The number is 718-664-9655, and that's 718-664-9655. And we're going to take probably we'll take the fifth caller. And while we're waiting for people to call in, Jane, do you want to tell people what we're giving away today?
Absolutely. Well, in honor of being on the cover of Knitters Magazine for the first time ever, we are giving away the garment that is on the cover, the Sunrise Stripe. It's done in Lynette, which is a 70% linen, 30% cotton, and Gelato, which is 100% rayon ribbon. And that colorway is Sunkissed. And so we are going to be giving away that kit. It is a $159 retail value, and it will also include the Knitters Magazine.
All right, I'm going to take one of our callers here, and I'm going to pick that one. Folks, if you're calling in and you're listening to the show, I'd love to ask before I click the put you on the line that you turn down your volume on your computer so we don't get the echo of death happening. I'll have to hang up on you if that happens. So here we go. We're going to pick from area code 401. Hello, area code 401. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Audrey Friedman from Rhode Island.
Audrey. From Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. Did you hear what you're getting, what you've won?
I am ecstatic. I love Siesta Yarns. Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you, Audrey.
Oh, this is great. I look forward to seeing you at Stitches East. And, wow, what can I say? I was the one, actually, several weeks ago that was the kiss of death with feedback.
Was that you?
It was me, and I'm so glad I got another lucky moment and didn't blow it. I had such feedback. I didn't even know that I was the one that was chosen. I heard absolutely nothing.
Yep.
So... now I left the room entirely.
No problem. Well, thank you very much for calling in, and congratulations on this. In order to get this to you, I'd love it if you could email me at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I'll make sure that Jeannie gets your information so that we can get your prize shipped out to you.
Oh, this is tremendously exciting. Thank you both for the generosity.
No problem.
Congratulations, Audrey. And when we see you at Stitches West, maybe you'll be wearing your garment.
Okay. Well, I'm on the East Coast, but who knows? I may come just to show it off.
Oh, thank you. East. I'm sorry, Stitches East.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I'll have to work quickly, get all the other things off the needles. But thank you. I really enjoyed the podcast, and like I said, the product is superb. So thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Hopefully see you both soon. Bye.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, now that was great. I'm so excited that she actually was the one that had the noise of death or something, and that she actually got a second chance to win. That's really great.
Yeah. Echo of death, that when we had somebody call in.
Echo of death.
That's great. Well, so, yay. Good for her. All right, well, that was fun, but let's move on. Before we get going, before we slide out of here and we run completely out of time, we're going long now, I don't care. People can pause and go as they see fit. But I want to talk to you about some of the charity work you've done. You tend to join me in a lot of the charity work that I do, and I really do always appreciate your support in this. But there's a couple of things that I want to call out because I want people to know about your involvement with some of these things. The first one I want to talk about is the work you've done with Belinda and Cece Creech from Elephants Remember Joplin. And I want to start with kind of the way that you started with them. Can you talk about that? Let's start about kind of how you met them and what happened when you first met them. Virtually, I should say.
Well, virtually I met them. You and I had a conversation. And folks, if you don't realize, Benjamin and I talk all the time, so many of our conversations are with each other about marketing ideas. But I don't know really who found Cece and Belinda or, you know, how that got started with XRX per se, but I remember getting involved when you made a phone call to me and you were telling me about Cece. And for those of you who don't know Cece and Belinda, Cece is, I don't know, she's 10 or 11 now. I don't quite know. But she started knitting elephants for children after the huge tornado hit Joplin, Missouri a couple of years ago. And she really knew that, you know, those kids needed something to hold on to. And so she started knitting elephants. And I believe that through their church, they raised some money so that Belinda and Cece could actually drive over to Joplin and hand out elephants. Isn't that correct, Benjamin?
That's what my understanding as well.
Yeah, exactly. So when you and I started having a conversation about it and that there were elephants to be knitted and they really didn't take much yarn and, you know, how do you not support a 9-year-old with her charity efforts, I went out to the outlet store, and we have an outlet store where we sell seconds and misdyed and sort of one-of-a-kind stuff, and I boxed up, I don't know, probably a 20-pound box originally that was just little mini skeins that was enough yarn to do elephants in worsted weight and fingering weight yarn, and I shipped it off to Belinda and CC so they can make elephants to give to people. And that's really how my involvement started in the Elephants Remember Joplin campaign.
Well, you got a nickname out of that effort, I remember.
Yeah, I did, yes. CC started calling me her fairy yarn mother, which was very, very cute and very sweet.
So, you know, along the way, we're in touch with Belinda and Cece and trying to support them. And we made the decision to bring Cece to Stitches Midwest last year to be our youngest teacher ever, to do basically a charity class on knitting elephants. We were privileged to have Drew Imborski, the crochet dude, come in and be the crochet side of an elephant wrangler, teaching the crochet side of that. And all of the money from the class, it wasn't an expensive class. I think it was an hour and a half long throughout the lunch period on a Friday or something like that. All the money went to Homes for Hope Joplin. What we needed from this was some kits. And, you know, I don't think I had to even finish the sentence before you jumped in and said, I got you covered on that. Can you tell us about the kits?
Well, originally, you know, my mind just immediately started thinking about, being a hand-dyed yarn company, we're just so versatile, and I could make a custom colorway that was CC's colorway. And so that's exactly what we did. I contacted Belinda and said, okay, you know, what are CC's favorite colors? And they sent me this list, and we started dyeing little samples, and we took pictures of them, and I sent them to Belinda. And I think she and CC were in front of the computer monitor going, yes, no, yes, no. And they CC decided on one particular color, and so it became CC's approved colorway, and that was the color that we put into the elephant kit. And that kit had the yarn, the polyfill, the pattern, both knitted and crocheted, and it had the 6-millimeter eyes. So that kit had everything you needed to complete one elephant, except for the needles, and that was completely self-contained. And that was what we donated to every participant who bought that class, and I believe there were 85 people who signed up for that class, for the 1-hour class.
And it was great, and it's a cute one. I think somebody said something to one of my kids that it was inspired by the candy Skittles. I'm not sure if that's true, but it was a cute little kit. We got the knit version of the pattern from Belinda, and our good friend Myra Wood did the pattern, the crochet pattern for it. And folks, if you're interested in that pattern is actually up on the Fiesta website at fiestayarns.com/elephants as a free download. So you can go get that, as well as the little video about Cece. So if you go there, you learn a lot more about this. But that it was really great, and you've since helped with lots of things having to do with Elephants from Chaplin. It was a kind of a fun thing, don't you think?
Oh, it was, absolutely. And Cece and Belinda are delightful. And, you know, Cece has a heart of giving and giving back to her community. And that obviously comes from amazing parents. And so just a big shout out to Belinda and, you know, just inspiring Cece to give back.
All right, let's move on to the next thing, Halos of Hope. We can't have a show where we don't talk about Halos of Hope. This is the unofficial Halos of Hope channel. It, just so you know, folks, I'm being right up front about that. You've been involved with Halos of Hope for a long time as well, almost as soon as I got involved with them. And the reason is that we're both friends with Pam Haschke. And, you know, you don't get to sit with Pam Haschke very long without two things happening, usually in pretty short order. The first is you fall in love with her. And the second is she makes you cry. And they're both good things. So you really started in with being a Hope sponsor for the Buzz. We, Drew Imborski, Mark Maraca, and I got involved last year about shaving our heads for charity. And we were looking for Hope sponsors, in other words, companies that would donate some money and help us out with that. And you were, I believe, were our very first Hope sponsor.
Well, I think I was, but, you know, going back a little bit, I agree completely with what you said about Pam. You can't help falling in love with Pam because she's just one of the most amazing women I have ever met in my life, and she always does make me cry. And the crying is really a good thing because she's talking about some wonderful story of a cancer survivor and what her charity has done. And, you know, there's not enough words to describe how wonderful she is. And any of you who haven't met her, please put that on your list to meet her because she's really an inspiring lady. But, yes, I was, I think I really was like the first Hope sponsor. And we sort of had this little plan hatch that at TNNA, the National Needle Arts Association, was this just a year ago? I think it was June a year ago, that there were some manufacturers and we had sort of done this little side deal that, you know, all of us are going to stand up and when Pam finishes her speech about who Halos of Hope is and tells her journey of a cancer herself, that we're all going to jump in and get the money donation going. And so we kind of had all decided on the side, like, yeah, we're going to donate this amount, you know. Well, I was so inspired, I jumped up and said, oh, I'll donate $2,000. And kind of everybody else looked around and went, well, that really wasn't our plan, but okay. And so one of the other manufacturers jumped in and said, oh, yeah, I'll donate $2,000 too. And then one of the other ones was like so caught off guard. They're like, I'll get back to you on that. And so it was so funny because later we had a good laugh about it because I just blown everything, you know, apart because I got so excited. And the funny thing was, and Drew Imborski, I think, still kind of hates me for this, I really was going to put my $2,000, and originally how this all started was that you could vote to save or shave. And so I was going to vote to save your hair. And because I just didn't really think like that you would look good like as a bald guy. So I really was going to put my money on your head to save your head. And somehow in all of my excitement, it turned out I put my money on Drew to shave him. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Drew was, like, standing up there going, excuse me, I thought we were friends. And it was so funny because, again, in all of my excitement, and do remember, I am blonde, I jumped up, I got so excited, I put my money on the wrong man. And to shave him, no less, not even to save him. So I think he's still a little bitter about that. But it was such a great opportunity. for Fiesta Yarns to do something meaningful. And what TAM does is meaningful. And as we went through, I think over the next 5 or 6 months, we ended up donating a little bit more money because I think Martin Maraca and Susie from Collage were up on stage, and I was, you know, I give Mark quite a hard time, and so I put $500 on his head to shave him. And so I think in the end, you know, we donated $2,500, and it was my utter pleasure to do so because Halos of Hope does such great work in the fiber community in coordinating donations at 400 cancer centers around the country. I mean, how can you not get involved with something so important? I don't believe there's any one of us that hasn't been touched by cancer in some way, whether we've had a family member or a friend who's had cancer or passed away from cancer. This is something everyone can get involved in.
Well, and it didn't stop there. I mean, after we were all done with the buzz, and the buzz was fun. You were there with Susan and everybody when we all got shaved. I think for the last issue when we put up the video that we have, you shot with your iPhone, right?
I did. Susie and I were standing over in the corner, and Susie was bawling her eyes out, and Pam had just been up on stage, and of course, every time Pam speaks, tears flow because she's so inspiring and the story is so important. So Susie and I are standing next to each other crying our eyes out like we're at a funeral, not at a charity event. And so I have my cell phone and I'm recording, and as the buzzing began and all three of you started having your head shaved, Jason, who's one of your staff members, he is quite skilled with the scissors, and I think he was shaving Drew's head, and literally within seconds, Drew had all of his hair gone because Jason is such an expert at shaving heads. And then, so the entire time during the video, you can hear me yelling, "Drew, you're so sexy," or "You're so hot," because he really did look hot with his bald head. And I'll just say, and maybe he won't be mad at me now for putting money on his head originally, is that he really wears bald very well. He is quite the handsome man, all bald and stuff. So he actually just posted in the chat room, "True story," and it is a true story. I was yelling, "You're so hot!" But Susie and I were standing there crying. So it was a great moment.
It was an emotional day. But it didn't end there. Once the buzz was done, and the buzz did very well, folks, we raised $20,000 by the time it was all done. Thank you very much to everybody who supported us. You know, we have a lot of costs at Halos of Hope, and most of those are about shipping. In fact, all of them really are about shipping hats, and so the money goes to make sure that, I think Pam is really amazing. She makes sure that at $10, makes sure that 31 hats get sent out, which I think is remarkable. I still don't know how she's accomplished that feat, but I'm going to figure out one day. But you didn't stop there. You decided that you wanted something ongoing to help Halos of Hope. And you brought your artistic sense to that. So can you talk about that?
Absolutely. You know, and you are correct when you say it's really a great thing to do a charity fundraiser and you raise a lot of money. But ultimately, every single day, we need to figure out how to raise money so that Pam can ship hats. And like you said, for every $10 donation that Halos of Hope receives, Pam has figured out some way to ship 31 hats to cancer centers around the country. And again, I don't know how she does it, but shipping is the largest expense that Halos of Hope encounters. And so I really then wanted to be able to do something more on a day-to-day monthly basis for her and the organization, because I know that they need funds on an ongoing basis. Their entire staff is completely volunteers. They do not have paid staff. Every dollar that gets donated to Halos of Hope goes for actual charity purposes, shipping hats, donations, whatever those things are. All the money that you give goes to cancer victims, cancer survivors somehow. And so I just really felt like it was important to give back on a day-to-day basis. So, again, I put my thinking cap on, and again, being hand-dyed yarn, we can create literally any color in the universe. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to create like a Halos of Hope color, and proceeds then from that, those sales will go to Halos of Hope on an ongoing basis. So I did a whole bunch of research and looked to see what the colors were, and you know, breast cancer survivors have pink is really their color, and there's a couple of organizations that have kind of updated that color palette, and it's pinks and fuchsias and charcoals and grays. And so I really, that was really my inspiration. I think I found a scarf somewhere that was a silk scarf that was those colors. And so I created this colorway called Inspiration, and part of the proceeds of every skein of yarn that is sold in that colorway goes to Halos of Hope. And so you can actually go to our website, and there is a page on our website that's called fiestayarns.com/halos, I believe. And you can learn more about Halos of Hope, plus you can also learn more about the Inspiration colorway and how to purchase that. And then that part of that money goes to Halos.
Which is wonderful. I see on the page there, you've got a Twilight necklace from Betsy Beads in that same color. We should get off tangent just a little bit and say, you really do have a problem with beads, don't you?
I do. I need a 12-step program. We need to start like a group called Betsy Beads Anonymous, and only if Lisa Manis, who is your marketing person, will join me in that, because I think her problem with Betsy Beads products is even bigger than mine. But one of the things we did was create a Inspiration colorway Twilight necklace kit, and that's straight out of the Betsy Beads book. I believe it's on page 44, the Twilight necklace. In the book, it's shown in the colorway Onyx, but you can get it in 14 different colorways, including the Inspiration colorway. And what is really cool about the Inspiration colorway, it also has the breast cancer little charm that goes on it as well. And it's done in the pinks and grays, and it really is quite a lovely necklace. And again, part of the proceeds from that kit go to Halos of Hope.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. So the last little piece that you're involved with in Halos of Hope is you've joined one of the subboards, a very important subboard of the Halos of Hope mission. You've joined the Fiber Council.
Yes.
Can you tell people what you do as part of that group?
Yes. I actually sit on the council with Drew Imborski, who is also Halos of Hope's Man of the Year. And our biggest goal is really just to spread the word about Halos of Hope and build awareness of the organization. The second thing that we really are trying to work on is build a reference guide for knitters and crocheters on what fibers are the best fibers to use for knitted or crocheted hats. And Pam has a list now of, you know, I use the word lightly, approved fibers that are best suited for hats, because, you know, you can't knit or crochet a hat with just any fiber, because you have to keep in mind that someone who has lost their hair, their scalp is very sensitive, and they need something that's soft and fluffy against their skin. And so that's one of the things we are trying to do, is enhance that list and make it complete. And I didn't talk to Pam about this, but if any manufacturers are listening and they want to submit fibers that can be approved for that list, they should send those to Halos of Hope so that we can test and swatch them to make certain that they're appropriate for hats.
Well, that's well done. That's well done. So I appreciate the work you're doing on that, Jane.
My pleasure. And you know what, Benjamin? I think I would be remiss in not thanking you as well, because last week you really went to bear for Halos of Hope over a copyright issue, and I think you should talk a little bit about that and what happened. But you know, we also want to say thank you to you. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'm being interviewed on my own show. This is a twist.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So for people that aren't following me on my Facebook page, kind of a nasty thing happened. Not nasty, just really unfortunate. It made us very sad. I try to be a positive person, and so does Pam. I sit on the board of Halos of Hope, and I want to make sure everybody understands that. Theft of intellectual property is a problem. I'm a publisher. I understand that. We certainly have had many times where people have copied stuff out of a magazine or a book or something like that and given it away or sold it or something like that. And it's, you know, it's against the law. And Jeannie, that you're not exempt from that either. You know, you commission patterns, and you and I have talked before. You've certainly had patterns that have been ripped off and redistributed illegally. And, you know, people forget that there's, like, time and money into these things. A designer had to be paid. A model needed to be paid. I mean, there's real work in this stuff. And even if it wasn't, it's just not right. And that's one thing. It's, you know, it's kind of a hazard of the industry. I tend to believe that most people are good people, and but as frustrated as I get about that, that's not the norm. But when I heard that we had some yarn stores that had downloaded some of the paper patterns on the Halos of Hope site, again, they're not expensive patterns, but what they were doing was copying them and then giving them out to their customers. Folks, that's a whole other level. That's stealing from a charity. I mean, these dollars are what allow Halos of Hope to continue to send hats out. It infuriated me, and I came out a little strong, and I'm not sorry that I came out a little strong. This is going to be one of those things where I'm probably going to be a cool-headed guy for the most part when stuff happens, but I swear, if people start messing around with Halos of Hope, I'm not going to be gentlemanly about it. I really am not. I don't think I was way off base. I was strong, but I wasn't way off base about it.
I think you kept your cool about it, but it really is something that we should all be very aware of, is that, you know, copyright is copyright. And I think one of the patterns that was getting copied is Pam's most extensive pattern. It's kind of her signature pattern. And, again, all of those dollars from those pattern downloads go to send out hats to cancer patients around the country. And so, you know, you and I and Pam had a really strong conversation about it, and it's just wrong. It's illegal, and it's wrong. And, you know, the terrible thing, we had another incident that happened at Stitches West where someone actually stole a hat out of the Halos booth. I'm speechless that somebody would steal a hat from a charity. And so not only did that happen to Pam in February, now this has happened. And so I think all of us want to go on record to say copyright is important. It's illegal to copy patterns. It's just morally and ethically wrong, if nothing else. And it really is, like, triply bad when you do it to a charity. And so, anyway.
It's hard. It's really hard. I mean, for the most part, I think you'll agree that the people in our industry are wonderful people. And it shouldn't take so few people to get under our skin about this. But it does. And it really does. So this is one of those things that I have a tough time being patient about. So everybody, do me a favor. Keep my blood pressure down and don't mess with Halos. Just you know, support them like I do. And, you know, don't mess with Halos. Okay, we're going to get off this subject because it's way too serious. So what are you and the Fiesta team working on next?
Well, you know, we're getting ready for TNNA and obviously getting ready for Stitches in August. But one of the things we are doing currently is we have an entire line of designs with Kristen Omdahl. They're called Date Night Knits, and you can find those up on our website. And, you know, they're 1 and 2 skein projects that are practical enough for every day but sexy enough for a date. And that's really the big thing and the push that we're doing right now. If you're going to TNNA and you're a local yarn store, we'll have new colors. And come by and meet Kristen. She's going to be in the booth. And, of course, you know, getting ready for Stitches and in August in Schaumburg. And, you know, so those are really the things that we're working on right now.
Cool. And so we can expect to see you at TNNA in Columbus next week. And that's our wholesale show, folks. It's not open to the general public. But for shops and signers who are going, would love to see you there. I will also be there. I will not be with the XRX team. I will be there demoing and showing off Hopscotch Web, the new product that I'm working on, and just happens to be Jeannie will be right across the aisle from me. So after that, of course, we'll be doing some other shows. We'll have Stitches Midwest, and then Stitches East, and then Stitches West, and you can find the Stitches schedule up on knittinguniverse.com/events. And I believe those are all the same shows you're doing, right, Jeannie?
Yes, except that I have one additional appearance I will be making in the middle of July at Pearlescent Yarns in Sunnyvale, California. And it's and Pam Hashke will also be there from Halos of Hope, because Nathaniel Apple, who is the owner of that store, has graciously organized an event, a 24-hour knit-in for Halos of Hope. And for 24 hours, starting noon July 13th until noon on July 14th, we will be knitting hats for Halos of Hope.
And are you going to stay up the whole time and knit?
No. I'm sorry. I will not. We've already warned Nathania that we're going to be there until we can't hold both eyes open anymore, and then we're going to come back in the morning. But Pam and I have already decided that we're too old to stay up all night long.
Well, I know it's going to be great, and I wish I could be out there with you. So before we wrap this up, I ask all my guests the same thing. And you can pick anybody you want to talk to, the consumer, the shop, the designer, the budding artist, the entrepreneur. Is there anything you'd like to say to anybody about anything?
Wow. You know, I think I might get a little philosophical, if that's okay.
Please feel free.
Okay. You know, the last 4 years have been really an interesting time in my life, both personally and professionally. And, you know, I think I've learned a lot of lessons from the hard way over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years. And, you know, some of my comments are going to apply professionally and personally and maybe both. And you can kind of fill in the blanks where they might fit appropriately in your life. But as a business owner, I think we can really no longer live with the notion that we can, like, unlock our front doors and turn on the lights and magic somehow is going to happen and people are going to stream into our businesses. And for anybody out there who owns a business and might be struggling in this economy, and I think all of us can say we have or are or have been, that the magic happens when you get involved and you're proactive in your businesses, and you must make the magic happen. And marketing is not the same as it used to be, and you must really, if you want to be successful, you must embrace social media, and I did it kicking and screaming, but it's been really the best thing I've done. And, you know, secondly, no one is entitled to keep you from being successful. So don't be afraid to maybe do what's unpopular. Think outside the box to forge your own way to being successful, because that's what business and you know, professional life and personal life is about. Think outside the box, and sometimes doing what's not the norm and that's a little on the edges is the thing that makes you the most successful. And so I encourage you to think outside the box as business owners. And, you know, never second guess yourself. And never become complacent, because when we become complacent, that's when we start failing. And I think, you know, from a personal standpoint, life happens in 360 degrees. So you have to look around every day for opportunities, and we have to really fight against that whole tunnel vision thing, not only personally but in business. And we have to look at every degree around us to see what's going on to be successful and not to get stuck in a rut. And so, you know, I guess find your happiness, find your passions, and go after them with gusto, and don't let anybody stop you. And I think that's how I've lived my life like the last 4 years, because at the end of my life, I don't want to ever look back and go, oh, I wish I would have. So that's what I would say as my final comments today.
Very nicely done. So I want to thank you again for joining me this morning, Jeannie. This was a lot of fun, and I look forward to seeing you later this week in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, Benjamin, thanks for having me on. I'm so happy I was on your 13th show, because I know I bring you such great luck. And yes, I will see you Thursday, but thank you so much. I'm honored to have been a guest on your show.
Thank you. Well, that was my good friend, Jeannie Randolph from Fiesta Yarns. Make sure you keep up with her by visiting her website, fiestayarns.com, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Next Monday, I'll be at TNNA, which means I won't be doing a show. Sorry about that, folks. It's just too difficult to try to organize a live show and work a booth, and I will be in the Hopscotch software booth doing demos this time rather than walking around and looking like I'm not doing anything. So, sorry about that. The following Monday, I'll be having Becca Smith from Bagsmith on the show. If you've ever met Becca and her team, you'll know just how much fun they are, and I hope you'll join us for that show in 2 weeks. For those of you who have missed anything on this podcast, I invite you to join us on our Ravelry group, Fiber Hooligans. Our moderator, Tammy Burke, does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide follow-up to any questions. I tiptoe around in there myself. I also want to make sure that you know I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to try to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, or just because I'm feeling feisty, I may even read your email or message on the podcast. That's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thanks for spending this time with us. I'll see you in 2 weeks on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.